Third appropriate pool meeting to order. We have a quorum. Were there any additions, deletions, or changes to the agenda that was published?
No, but I would make you aware that under the issue having to do with the Turner Basin excavation costs, we do have an updated agreement with some minor changes in it that we'll go over with you when we get to that issue. But the one that's in your packet is no longer applicable.
Alrighty. Okay, we have the consent calendar before us, including last meeting's minutes, financial reports, and water transactions. Any members wish to discuss any of these items?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Alrighty. Going to business item 2A, the Turner Basin excavation cost sharing agreement.
Copy there, then.
I do.
The agreement that you have in front of you has been altered slightly based on conversations we've had with IEUA to incorporate into the agreement a 15% contingency clause so that we don't have to come back at some point in time and deal with these minor things as they come up. So we consented to that, and those changes are included in the news that has the red writing on it, if you've got that. It's been incorporated into that. Essentially what we're doing there is we're going to be working with IEUA on the development of the environmental work and the grading plan for the parcel. The ability to be able to get this parcel included within the Millikan project will be a tremendous savings for both IEUA and Watermaster in the development of one more basin for us to use for recharge. So we're anxious to get the contractor to utilize that. And by having the environmental work done and the grading plan completed, we think that will be enough to get him to use that as the source of his soil for the project. So,
with the increase in the contingency, does that change the agreement amount of $24,000? I'm sorry, I don't have the one. So, what would be the total
revised?
It's up $27,680.
And that also concludes the $15,000 for the traffic study that may or may not be needed to be completed?
Yes. I think it does, yes. Chris is nodding his head, yes, it is. So.
Ken, is this the project that wasn't budgeted, but IUA's fronting the money, or is that a different project?
That's a different project.
So money's budgeted for this?
No, money is not budgeted for this. We're going to have to when we talk early in the later part of the meeting, Joe gives his update on where we are. We're going to talk a little bit about where we think we've got some money to move around and stuff. So this will be one of the items that we do a line item transfer for later in the fiscal year before we get to this point of spending the money.
I have some comments. First of all, is this the location where they were talking about the multi-purpose? Is this the location?
Yes.
The one with the county? There's various agencies involved with this.
City of Ontario, City of Rancho Cucamonga, the County of San Bernardino. The Conservation District, IEUA, Watermaster are all partners on various aspects of this development of property. As we've made it clear, and the Conservation District has made it clear, that our interests are for recharge facilities. And so this is in line with the overall project and our interests in it.
Okay. And the second question I had, this is one of the basins probably identified as part of the master plan, I take it. Mm-hmm. There was also an update that was provided by Ben on other low-hanging fruit, other mm-hmm. basins. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it was San Sabine.
This was identified in there as well.
Relative to that one, is this one of the top ones we wanted to hit first?
Well, when you start setting priorities, there's a lot of things that go into the idea in terms of priorities. This is one of the projects that we think is most easily accomplished,
okay,
and at the least amount of money invested into it, because we think we're going to have the ability to get a contractor to basically grade the project for us.
That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Any other member comments?
I have a question, if I may. This contract, is it for O&M work to an existing basin, or is it capital to develop additional recharge?
Well, the money that we're actually putting in here is going to be for the environmental and for the grading plan. There's no money for any work to be done on the basin or any O&M. That will be included in the O&M budget we do yearly after the project is completed. But this is strictly in order to us to be able to entice the contractor who's going to be doing the work on the Millikan grade separation project to use this piece of property as the borrowing pit for the material he's going to need on site. That would get the project developed for us for free.
The question is, traditionally the cost-sharing agreement for recharge basins is the O&M portion is divvied out based on production, yet the capital improvements are usually separated out based on operating safe yield. So I was just wondering, I mean, the budget line item isn't, I didn't see that in with this, so I don't know if that's...
No, we're going to have to do a line item transfer and create an item for this. This was an opportunity that came up very quickly, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't lose the opportunity of getting the contractor to do this work for us. So we're going to treat this as a cost-sharing agreement in terms of splitting it 50-50 with IEUA, and then we'll deal with the issues of O&M once the project is developed and we have a facility that we can deal with.
So the budget transfer will come from the capital component, the debt service?
I'm not 100% sure exactly where we're going to be. We've got a number of categories you're going to see in a little bit where we think we are with the budget at this moment in time, and then we're going to shift monies from our existing budget in to cover these costs. As you can see, we're not talking about a lot of money.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments?
I forward the motion for discussion purposes.
I'll second that.
Okay. My only comment is, and maybe you've answered it, is are we today going to recommend budget transfers that will provide funding for this?
We feel certain that the budget incorporates the money necessary to cover this project without having to do any special assessments or do anything abnormally other than just move some money within our budget around.
But we're not proposing to do that today?
No, we're not.
Okay.
Well, we are going to give you a report on where we think those are, but we're actually, the recommendation will be to hold that off for a few months until we know a little bit more about some of these categories and we can define them, but we feel fairly certain that we'll be able to cover those.
Now, is this going to be a separate budgetary line item category, or is it going to fit in under OBMP implementation? Or
It's going to be under the OBMP, and it may constitute its own line item. We haven't discussed exactly but we will identify it somehow.
Okay, then I'll amend my motion to include language to the effect that recommend approval, whatever the approval item is, subject to establishment of fiscal year ending 2011 funding for the project.
That's acceptable.
You accept that amendment?
I will accept it.
Okay. Is there a second?
I already seconded.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
The next item is the RFP for outside audit firms. I think most of you are aware that we have been using Meyer Hoffman McCann as the auditing firm for Watermaster now for the last 5 years. As part of the discussions that have come based upon recommendations made by the State Comptroller's Office and parallel positions that other agencies that have used the same firm are going through, we think it's a good idea to go back out onto the streets with an RFP. And so I've asked Joe to construct the basis of an RFP and bring it before the Watermaster party so that we could approve it and get this process taken care of so that we don't hold up our audit, which will be started in a couple of months. So, Joe?
Oh, Sherilyn, we don't need to. There's not a presentation really for this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, basically, page 65 and 66 of the board packet, there's a staff letter that basically recommends a request for RFP, request for proposal. To just give you a little bit of background, obviously Watermaster is required by state law for an annual audit each year. The last 12 years, we've had the firm of Conrad & Associates for seven of those years, and Conrad & Associates in 2006 was purchased by McCann, or Meyer Hoffman McCann, and for the last 5 years, we've had that firm doing the audit. They've been we have not any problems with them. Obviously, you know the issues that have gone on with Bell. That's not the reason why we're doing the RFP. But 12 years of having the same, in essence, audit firm, it's good, prudent business to go out for an RFP, make sure that you're getting the best value, the best quality for the services, and that's basically what we are doing. If you look at, well, and also to cost, you know, obviously we're spending just a little bit under $10,000 per year for the audit, and in this economy, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to try to find another audit agency or audit firm that would do the same audit for the same price. So we could be looking at double, if not triple, the cost. Just to go over the schedule, basically in the next 25 days, I'll be wrapping up the RFP, and we'll be issuing that in March 1st. We'll then have basically sitting out there 45 days for the closing of the RFP, 60 days to do the award. Around August 15th, the new audit firm would start the field audit, and then 45 days after that, we would have our audit. So basically, we're looking at the next 270-some-odd days of the audit process being completed.
I had a question. If you're telling me that they usually do it for under $10,000, you're telling me that we go out, we're likely to have proposals that are two or three times as much. They're doing an adequate job.
It could be.
Why would we shop around or get, I mean, am I missing something?
No, it's just good business sense at this point to go out and, first of all, just simply by doing an RFP doesn't mean that you're going to change.
Right.
But with everything that has been and has gone on with Meyer,
okay,
it's not a bad time. And again, we really, in essence, haven't done an RFP or changed audit firms in 12 years. So again, just by simply doing an RFP doesn't mean that we're going to change. We may not. It just depends upon what the quotes come back.
Do we have a multi-year contract with
them? We do not.
Okay. So we're year to year?
Yes.
Actually, as a rule of thumb, and I'm surprised that we've lasted 12 years with them. I mean, we should be changing, I think, a little bit more frequently. We do as a public agency.
It's in the industries I've come from, it's usually every 3 to 4 years change.
Yeah.
Just rule of habit.
I think one of the reasons why, and I agree with you 100%, mm-hmm. that it's good practice to change every 3 to 4 years to make sure that as a protection against people becoming comfortable in the environment. The one thing that has been for the Water Master, at least, is that we've had, of the same firm, we've had different auditors mm-hmm. within the same firm who have been a part of this audit. So we haven't had the same set of eyes on the documents as we move forward. But we do think it's a good idea to go back out on RFP. And if Meyer Hoffman McCann provides us with a good proposal that we think, given the circumstances of their credibility in terms of an audit firm, which have been questioned, that would satisfy our need, then we'd have no problem coming back recommending them again based upon all of the circumstances. But we just think it's a good idea to give other people a chance to come in and see what they would do.
Do you have a list of firms that they will be receiving the RFP, or are you going to put it out for anyone to submit a proposal?
There's a listing very similar to what IEUA has. I'm looking at probably slimming that down. There's a lot of large firms. Quite honestly, I don't see the large firm. Ernst & Young, I doubt, is going to come back and be willing to do this audit for $10,000.
We're near that.
Any other questions from
my other question is I was going to say Inland Empire's they're currently doing the auditing for Inland Empire and,
mm-hmm. and for Cucamonga.
Cucamonga.
Are you guys going out?
We are finishing up this year, and then we are going to go out for an RFP. We've had some extensive discussions with the principal that's on our that services us, and he was never involved in the Bell stuff, and we've been very comfortable with the level of service that we've received and also the level of detail that they go through. So it's never been an issue. But just as a rule of thumb, just what we do in our policies is every 3 to 4 years we do go out and do an RFP and search for a new firm.
And again, you know, to put it on the record, yeah, we have not had any issues with our audit firm.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Given the schedule that you have laid out here, and I think it's good, I just would would hope that this provides you enough opportunity to pretty accurately predict what the cost of the service is going to be so that it's put in the budget for next year as you're developing that fiscal year budget. So it seems like you might probably have a pretty good indication after April 15th what your kind of costs are going
to
be
in
the range.
Just to put in there, as a placeholder, I'm going to put $20,000 for the audit. Okay. That may be high, but I would expect that if we do switch audit firms, it would be higher.
Okay. Any other comments? Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Well, maybe we'll go ahead with the next item.
Okay, RFP,
well,
location for the DeSalt Authority.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mark is here to talk a little bit about and answer questions having to do with the well locations, I-19, 20, and 21. Just to kind of give you a background, Watermaster, as we have been discussing with the CDA as we move forward, have taken on a role as a very close partner with the CDA to make sure that we don't allow any time or any slippage in time for us to be able to work with them so that we slow them down in any way. So Watermaster, in this partnership that we have developed with the CDA, has been working with them to make sure that as they make decisions, that those decisions are in fact aligned with the hydraulic control mission that we are concerned about. And so one of those, we have, as you might recall, we have worked with wells I-16, 17, and 18 so far, and similar approval has been given to those wells. We're now in a position to be able to evaluate the locations of the next three wells, the final three wells, we think. And Wildermuth has gone through an evaluation of that, and included in this is the recommendation to approve the well locations for 19, 20, and 21. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mark, and he can kind of walk through some of the technical discussion on the issue.
Good afternoon. I'm going to use some visuals here to hopefully make this clear, although this map is very unclear. Sorry. This is a map of the lower end of the Chino Basin. This is the Chino Airport here. This is Kimball Avenue here. The Chino 1 DeSalter well field, the existing wells, are shown here in blue. This is 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then 5, and there's more off to the east of this on this chart. These are groundwater elevation contours. They're relatively recent. And from about here, the interpretation from DeSalter 1, well number 5, east, we have complete hydraulic control. We have it today. When we go west of DeSalter 1, well number 5, the state of hydraulic control it doesn't exist. There's in the upper layer of this aquifer, the layer we can actually produce significant water from, and water is flowing out. So we do not have hydraulic control. And you can see that anywhere along here. If you look at these contours and you put this flow line on here to show you that a particle of water coming through here would just keep going like this. And the evolution of piece two, we created these wells, which are hypothetical wells, which are shown in yellow, as potential well sites for achieving hydraulic control, where if we were to construct these wells, construct them properly, that we ought to be able to eliminate any outflow through there. And then that's what we need to do to keep max benefit and to keep the cost of recycling reasonable. Also on this chart, you'll see this is the scientific or engineering interpretation of the water quality data as to TCE in this area, where the color gradation is from low to non-detect at the boundary here to getting greater levels within this plume. We don't know much about the source in terms of physically where it is in three dimensions on site, that is still active or not. But this is our current interpretation of where that is. Now, the last interesting point on here are the little orange squares. There's I-16, 17, and 18. These are wells that are either constructed or in some state of construction by the CDA. And of course, today we're talking about 19, 20, and 21. And you can see they're very close to the location of where we postulate they might be during the development of Piece 2. So what we did was we got these locations in December, that is 19, 20, and 21, from CDA consultant and Jack Safely. And then we also got updates on what they might produce, what the CDA would like to produce from these wells, from Mr. Minmack and somebody else. I can't remember. They worked on those together. We went back and ran our model just to make sure we could get hydraulic control and also to check the fate of the Chino Airport plume. And you'll see on it in a moment, you'll see what might be going on with this, what we has traditionally been called the Ontario International Airport plume. Can we go a slide, please? Or do I do it? Okay. Could you go one more? This is the state of hydraulic control with the proposed wells from the CDA. These are the three new ones here, 19, 20, and 21. And you've seen this map before with a slightly different well configuration and pumping rate down here. And again, these are the groundwater projected contours, and this is in 2020. The contours are wrapping around the well field, and these little arrows here are unit vectors. They show the direction of water flow in the ground. And everywhere we have hydraulic control. So from a hydraulic control perspective, moving these wells around a little bit, changing the pumping didn't matter. Could you go back one slide? And you know, this is a 2030 projection of just water, of the fate of that TCE plume. And we made an assumption that there was no source up here, that it was gone. And you can see this plume is sort of separated here. You remember that from hydraulic control, the vectors were coming up like this. There was a portion of the plume that was down here. It's been put away, and it's going to drift on into well, wherever it goes, rising groundwater perhaps at Prado. But this plume that was up here above and within a reasonable distance downstream or down gradient of the well field is pretty much completely interdicted, which you would expect because of the direction of the flow vectors. So we, you know, this was under the assumption that we'd be pumping in the upper layer. And if we do this, then from a water master's engineering, our perspective and recommendation to you is that we think this are functionally equivalent locations. And if these wells are operated to pump only from the shallow zone without too much drawdown or unreasonable production rates, we don't expect to have any significant subsidence from these wells either. So our recommendation to you is that these wells are good locations, and that water masters should approve the locations.
Question, Mark. Some of the wells that you had, the 16, 17, 18, those mm-hmm. are, has those been test pumped? Are they operational? What are they?
I think 16's complete. 18's been drilled, and they're getting ready to construct the well. And I don't think 17's been constructed yet.
No, has not.
Of 16, of the all the wells, you assume certain production out of the wells as part of your modeling effort. With the test pumping that you had, how is it showing out? Is it showing consistent with your modeling effort?
Well, we assume in the model what it's going to do.
Right, but the test pump.
The test pumping is not as, they don't look as good. We won't know yet until they're actually begin to construct it and test it as they're constructed.
Okay.
But the indication is we're not going to get as much water out of them as we assumed in our modeling.
That's kind of a double edge because on one hand, you're not going to get as much water out of them. On the other hand, it may indicate that we are closer to hydraulic control than we maybe thought we were based on the original modeling. So for the expansion parties, it's probably bad news. For the water master in general, it's probably good news.
I guess the reason I was asking is because a while back, we had a presentation before, and one of the I know the target was to achieve a finality of 40,000 if possible. My concern was, given the effort that we're putting forth, given the effort, the acquiring the sites, doing the wells and what have you, I guess I've always got the impression that some of the things that Scott had said, that the fact that we're doing the effort, not to necessarily achieve 40,000, satisfies our obligation, even though the wells themselves, say, possibly might not yield as much. Is that my understanding still correct on that?
You're close. I mean, it's hard to say exactly. I can tell you, day before yesterday, we did have a meeting with the regional board as one of our normal quarterly meetings to go over progress on the desalter expansion, and we went through this in detail with Kurt and staff so that they understood the dynamics that were going on over there. They were very satisfied when we discussed with them the schedule. As we put in the schedule we sent to them, that schedule shows that the overall project is in fact 7 months behind the original schedule that we gave them a year or so ago. The good news is that we're actually going to start production on the hydraulic control portion of those wells ahead of time. And so the regional board is very pleased that we're going to be able to do that, and they know that as we start to operate those wells, the expansion group and the desalter start to operate, that they're going to go through a whole series of pumping regimes in order to get to a point where everybody's comfortable with where the pumping is. And they want to just see modeling that shows essentially what Mark had within that map that shows that the vectors are all, or very closely all of them, are going to come back towards the wells. I think Mark is basically saying in his opinion letter here and with the locations of the 16, 17, 18, that as long as the pumping regimes are adequate and sufficient, that there's no reason why those vectors will not show that way. So that am I correct in that?
It might be easier to get hydraulic control under the scenario we have.
Yeah. But the regional board's very pleased.
Dave?
The action that the committee is being asked to take is to approve the location only, not the design of the wells?
No, just the locations of the wells.
The locations are consistent with what we expected under Piece 2 and the LBMP.
Okay.
I don't think Dave was done yet.
That's okay. Go ahead. Maybe your questions will trigger other thoughts.
Okay. Is the focus of this approval process on hydraulic control only, or does it cover other things such as subsidence, for example?
No, it's only hydraulic control.
But Watermaster's approval of these wells is contingent upon pumping from the shallow zone only.
At reasonable rates.
And so
we determine later.
So the design, Watermaster is not in a position to approve any well or give any stamp of approval for any well design that does not have only shallow pumping.
In our prior approvals, we added language which said subject to screening in the shallow zone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so... Is this language different than what we've done in the past?
No, the only difference is that they have accepted that premise already, and so we see no reason to have that in there. Now, it could be added in, but it will not change anything. Their designs are in the shallow zone only.
Mr. Chair.
So, it's just, if you want to add it would not be inappropriate. Yeah, Tom.
My only question is regarding, we're going to approve the locations. Is that the motion today? As opposed to accepting the Watermaster's recommendation or accepting Watermaster staff recommendation. I think we've talked about this before, but can you remind me why we're approving the locations or that language?
The language was put in here, and it's consistent with what we've done in order to provide the confidence to the CDA that they, in fact, have locations that will meet our needs so that they're not going out on a limb in developing something that eventually will not cause hydraulic control to be achieved. We have every reason to believe as Watermaster, based on consultant modeling, that these wells will in fact achieve hydraulic control based upon the design that they have talked about with us.
Well, I believe that too. I think it's kind of weird that we're approving these locations. It's just an odd language as opposed to accepting your recommendation. Approving a location would suggest that we have information on the criteria, how they were identified, you know, or what went into those locations, which we don't really have.
I'm not so sure we don't have the information in terms of how they determined where those locations were. Yeah,
but this group, we're kind of accepting your recommendation as opposed to approving the location. It's just, I mean, it's probably a moot point. It's just an odd language to me. It seems to me it would be more more appropriate to accept the recommendation of the location.
I don't think that that distinction in the way the motion is made will have any impact on the CDA's decision to move forward. So if that's the pleasure of the group, I don't see any problem with doing that.
Mark?
It's my understanding that the CDA has asked historically that we actually approve this location of the wells. Hmm. I mean, that's my understanding.
That's true, but I don't know that they would disagree with the distinction that Tom is talking about. So, but CDA is back in the back of the room, and I realize he's got all of maybe a week under his belt. But
give me a couple more days.
Yeah,
I'll give you an opinion.
Yeah, but the CDA is concerned about here, and I think it's fairly clear, is that they just don't want to get out ahead of us too far, and then spend good money after bad. If that's the case. So they want to make sure that we're hand in hand as we go forward, and that we think that's a good step as well. So,
you know, I would have to agree with Tom. I think that perhaps we could revise the motion to approve CDA's proposed location based on staff recommendations. I think that would help.
I think that would be fine.
Who's staff's recommendation?
Staff's recommending the approval of these locations. We think these locations are going to meet the needs of hydraulic control. I think we're getting into a little bit of semantics here, but the bottom line is that the net effect is that we're fine with those three locations.
Yeah. Dave, do you have a comment?
I have a couple of other questions. The TCE contamination, does the data show that the contamination is in the shallow zone only, or is it in both the shallow zone and the deep zone, or do we even know?
Well, it's almost all in the shallow zone. I think the desalter production, the deep wells, I think 2 and 3 or 1 and 3, I don't recall off the top of my head, but they have drawn this TCE from the shallow aquifer down into the deeper aquifer system. That has happened. So there's a little bit of depth, and the desalter wells are sort of helping out, taking care of that, and then the rest of most of this material contaminant is in the shallow zone.
Okay. Does anyone know? Does the county have an opportunity to review the well design to know if the design of the wells is going to help accomplish their goal of remediating the contamination?
It's my impression, and I think it's wise. In the terms of the county's role here, so far the county has not indicated that they are, and they have not indicated that they are not going to be involved with the cleanup effort as approved by the CDA. And therefore, it's my impression that this design is strictly between the CDA and Watermaster, and if it cleans up the VOCs, that's great. Until they put money into the pot, I don't think we have any obligation to them to share any of our data with them. Now, it's my opinion, based upon working with Mitt Wildermuth, is that the pumping of the CDA will, in fact, clean up their plume. But in terms of giving them any kind of an indication that they might have veto power over any design, I don't think that's a good idea.
But again, we're not approving the design of the well. We're Mm-mm. merely considering the location.
This is strictly right now, at this point in time, only well sites.
So, Ken, on the county, I know a while back there was this issue about possibly partnering up with them and sharing mm-hmm. some costs. I guess when you were talking veto, I didn't look at it that way. I thought sharing information, sharing the design, not necessarily approval power, but at mm-hmm. least heads up, here's what we're doing. Should you guys join us down the road, at least you've had your input. But I wasn't thinking in terms of veto power. I was just thinking that it's kind of a courtesy. That's what I was thinking.
You know, we have been fairly open and with the whole process that we've gone through here, and I'm guessing that understand that working with the county now, Mr. Jeske on behalf of the CDA has been working with them, and I'm certain that he has probably shared with them at least some of the design concepts that are going into these wells,
okay.
and providing them with some assurance that in fact their plume will be picked up by the CDA. But to my knowledge, they haven't requested to see them, and for us to send them to them would almost indicate that they have some ability to change that design, and I don't think that's a good idea.
Okay. Any other member comments?
You're going to comment?
Huh?
I thought Michael was going to comment.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
And now that motion, based upon what Tom was talking about, to accept the staff's recommendation, was that the motion that was made?
Charles.
Yeah, I'll make the motion that, based on staff recommendations, we approve the well location.
Okay, so that was the motion?
Correct.
Okay, good. Just want to make sure.
Reports and updates?
Yeah, a few items. Sorry. Am I on?
No.
Am I on now?
No. For some reason it's not. There it
is. There you go. A few items to report on. The first one's the draft restated Water Master judgment. This has been a process we've been working on for quite a while. The draft is posted on the Water Master website. We've been getting comments from everybody. Those have been very helpful. The text of the judgment is mostly done. We have some again, comments from individual parties that we need to work into that, but mostly it's done. What we're doing right now is dealing with the party lists. As you recall, when we discussed this a couple months ago, we indicated that there are not only issues with amendments that have been made to the judgment, but changes in parties that have happened since 1978 that aren't necessarily reflected in the party lists that are in the exhibits to the judgment. So we're working through that process. The real big one is the ag pool. Staff has been working with a committee from the ag pool in order to update their party lists. There are complications not only in terms of figuring out who should be in the pool now, but also setting up a process so that we don't get out of date going forward. We have some ideas for this. It may involve going back to the court before we go to the court with the restated judgment so that we can get approval for how to notify these people, how to bind them to the judgment, how to bind their successors and interest in a easy and cost-effective way. So this is something we continue to work through right now. Most of the attention of Water Master staff is on the ag pool portion of it. Probably once we get that part done, the rest of it will move fairly quickly because that really is the hard complicating factor. The second item is the January 21st hearing update. We did have a hearing a couple weeks ago. That hearing was to continue the appointment of the 9-member board for a further 5-year term. There was no opposition to that motion. The court did grant the request. Court signed an order which we served on everybody last week. So the current board is extended until February 2016. Also at that hearing, we updated the court both on the restated judgment issue and on the CDA desalter approval of the Water Master resolution. We explained where we were on each of those processes. The judge seemed satisfied with the progress we're making and the pace at which we are handling them, and set another hearing for April 22nd. That's a Friday at 10:30, and the anticipation is that we're going to handle the CDA resolution at that hearing. We may also wrap into that these ag pool process issues that I was also describing. The third item is the January 26th settlement conference. This is the paragraph 31 appeal from the non-agricultural pool. I think several of you were at that settlement conference, so you know what happened, but ultimately there was no settlement reached at the mediation meeting. And so instead, the court has now ordered a briefing schedule for the appeal. We served that order, I think, this morning, and I think there's a copy of it on the back table if you didn't get it. The order sets the deadline for the opening briefs. That's by non-agricultural pool and CSI for 40 days from the date of the order. We calculated that to be March 8th. So that's what we're taking as their deadline is March 8th. There has been no order concerning when replies to those opening briefs will be due. It will probably be within 30 to 60 days of their filing. And so the process from here is that they now have until March 8th to file their opening briefs. Watermaster, the appropriated pool, whoever else wants to reply will then have a chance to file reply briefs. The court will then do something. I've seen some instances recently where the court has actually issued tentative rulings and indicated that the parties didn't have to have a hearing. They could just accept the tentative. So we may get that, or the court may order us to have a hearing, and then it will issue its order. But it's a fairly simple process from here. Briefs, reply briefs, and then either a hearing or no hearing, and we get a decision. So I was pleased to see the order moving the briefing schedule in a fairly expeditious way. So hopefully we will get through this as quickly as we can. The court did also indicate in its order that there would be no extensions granted without good cause. So that was also a very good thing in terms of timing to see. The fourth item is the Santa Ana Sucker Critical Habitat Designation. I can't remember if we've reported this at the appropriate pool yet, but the Fish and Wildlife Service did designate the part of the river that goes by Chino Basin as critical habitat for the sucker. This is not the result that we wanted. The other parties on the river, such as San Bernardino Muni, Western, City of Riverside, they are also dissatisfied with the decision by Fish and Wildlife. They have perhaps more significant concerns because they actually do things in the river. And so a committee has been formed and they're deciding what their appropriate response will be. Watermaster has been participating in that to I think we will follow their lead with whatever they decide to do. It's looking like they're probably going to challenge the decision and litigate it, in which case, again, we'd follow as our own entity, not part of some kind of coalition, but also following their lead and letting them really take the laboring oar on that. And we'll keep you updated as decisions are made on that. And unless there are questions, that's all I have to report.
Any questions? Engineering report?
I have three things to report on. First is there was a subsidence committee or a subsidence land subsidence committee meeting in January, and based on that, you know, we're taking the land subsidence as an issue for the southern part of MZ1 and looking at a basin-wide approach. It became clear at that land subsidence committee meeting that there needed to be some boot up for people who are unfamiliar with the effort. So there was a separate meeting, a follow-on meeting at our office last week sometime. It was fairly well attended. We went through the technical description of land subsidence, you know, in the West, as well as kind of broadly what's happening in the basin, and the need to discuss some of our current programs like we're doing in MZ1 now. And so there are some minutes for that meeting, which unfortunately didn't get in here in time, so we'll have those available for you to see. The next subsidence committee meeting is on February 24th. It's shown...
it was moved from the 17th, which is on the schedule.
The future meeting schedules. You want to make note of that. And there is an agenda on the table back there for you to see if you want to see what's coming up. On the MZ3 recharge project, Watermaster staff from Water Conservation District have been working pretty hard to come up with a proposal of what's possible, what could be looked at. And we're still working on that. I guess we'll make it make it available fairly soon. Now, Ken, when's our next meeting with the county? Is it
with Riverside County? County? Ben, do you remember?
No.
We don't.
On schedule? There isn't one scheduled.
I can tell you, though, that Ben did attend a budget hearing for the County of Riverside a few days ago, representing Watermaster to make the plea on behalf of the Watermaster parties in the MZ3 area to include funding within their budget for the Riverside County Flood Control for projects dedicated to the Chino Basin. They were very excited to go ahead and do that. There's no dollars yet have been identified. But they are definitely going to keep it in consideration as they develop their budget. So,
yeah, I think it's worth noting too that Ben, by being there and making the pitch, was really important. So that was good job, Ben. So we're really looking at a project that has a stormwater capacity in the 5,000-6,000 acre foot range and about $27 million. It's a ballpark we're in right now. Finally, Watermaster was asked to take a look at this Chino Creek. Well, I-18 design, and there should be something in your agenda package, I believe.
It's on page 78, yeah.
Yeah. So, could we pull that last slide up? Yeah, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, unless you want to.
Is this the second well?
This is I-18.
It's yes, this is the second well.
We saw one earlier.
We've done 16 already. This is 18, which was the second well that's under construction.
Okay, could you go one more slide or a couple more slides so we get to the last slide?
There it is.
So, we gave conditional approval for this. We were very clear we wanted to see production in the, we're calling the upper aquifer, layer one. They came up with a design which actually takes it a little bit deeper than that. This is where we would have terminated it. What they wanted to do was preserve the option later on if subsidence could be shown to not be an issue, to actually pump from a lower portion of the aquifer. So what they've done is they're going to build this well with perforations that take it down to around 340 feet, 50 feet, and they're going to backfill the bottom of the casing through the screens with gravel and put a cement plug in there. So it's going to initially pump from layer one, through monitoring for subsidence and then this whole project going, if it looks like they can, without causing any injury, they'll come back and ask for some approvals to remove that plug, float out the gravel, and pump from a larger portion of the formation. So that's kind of unique, and we'll probably be seeing this at some other wells as proposals come in also. So this is, we reviewed this and we saw no reason why they shouldn't do this from a technical standpoint. So they're probably going to go ahead and construct it just like this.
Yes. Mark, could they do the same with the inflatable ladder?
We had long discussions with them, and geosciences design, and they're sticking by this as the most cost-effective approach to do.
Yes.
We don't want to tell them how to do it. That's their business. We just want to make sure that they first pump from here. And then later on, again, if it can be demonstrated to not be cause harm or significant subsidence, then perhaps they can drill out there, take out that cement plug and float out the gravel and pump more water from more of the formation.
Are those two water, is the water bearing strata separated between the two?
Yes.
Okay. So okay.
Yeah, any kind of movement in the granular pack, they've done a lot of calculations and they show it's very small. In fact, right now the water level is actually deeper in this lower area down here than it is in this upper area. It's because of the existing desalter, we think. The deep wells. In desalter one, wells one through four are perforated deep.
And the yield gallons per minute, I'm assuming, varies from the upper perfed area to the lower perfed area.
Absolutely. So that's all I have. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
I've asked Joe to put together, based upon the information we've had on 6 months' worth of experience with our budget, to give you a preview. And as I'd mentioned during our discussion on the previous item having to do with the contract, Watermaster has been tracking all of our budgeted amounts and have been looking. We have been tracking all of these overages and under budget areas, and Joe's going to give you a brief overview of that, and then would like to provide some comment after he gets done. So, Joe.
The information is provided in the board packet on pages 92 and 96. This is a second quarter financial review. The good news is, and there's actually two bits of information I'd like to get right out there. As Ken has mentioned before, we're doing fine. There isn't any room for any issues. The wheels haven't fallen off the bus yet. We're not planning to. And we're not doing a special assessment at this stage. So with that said, let's
go.
Any
other good news?
That's the good news. That's the good news. The year-to-date numbers. Oops.
Okay.
Yeah. We're in the black, yeah.
We need more technical services here.
Yeah.
No money for
computers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I'll just let Sherry Lynn do it.
There okay.
The year to date for the first 6 months, actual expenses 3.2, almost 3.3 million, compared to a budget of 3.8 million. That's an under budget of 546,000, or another way to look at it, 85.71% of the budget, which means that we've left. Or there is available 15% of the budget still there. As Ed mentioned, there's no real changes from the first quarter results. Everything is tracking fairly consistent from first quarter to second quarter. Last quarter, G&A and projected expenses were under budget. It's the same as what's currently happening. Our legal expenses continue to be over budget in the same areas and the same categories as they were previously. And as I mentioned, the regional board fine has not been assessed. That's still part of our budget. Looking forward, the projection, basically what I did is I went back and looked at the first 6 months, looked to see whether there were any anomalies in the first 6 months. If there were, we took account for those, then basically just multiplied the information by two, looked to see if there was going to be any strange occurrences happening in the second part, adjusted for that, and realized that we're, in essence, going to be 100% of the budget. Now, you may wonder how that's going to happen. If you could flip to the next page. We've looked at some basic assumptions, and obviously Mr. Manning's retiring as of March 1st. We'll be paying out vacation, sick, and comp time when he departs. Each year, we basically take the Watermaster staff and assume what the vacation, sick, and comp time at year end is going to be, and then we accrue for that. The difference between what we've accrued and what we're going to be paying out is approximately $25,000. Then we factored in, I took a gamble and assumed that with the search for Mr. Manning's position, there could be some search and consulting costs. We probably will not fill that position March, April, or May, so those savings would help fund the search and consulting costs. And again, looking in my crystal ball, I assume that we probably have a CEO start as early as June 1st. Along with the $25,000 that we've out there for the salaries, I've estimated that with the G&A, that's pens, pencils, postage, and all the other items, we can probably continue with the stage that we're going right now and save in another approximate $29,000. So basically, the savings in the one category of G&A will help pay for that extra $25,000. So net to net, we're still looking very good. On the legal services, we're going to continue with the same cost patterns that we had in the first 6 months. Ontario Airport plume, with some increased negotiations, we're looking at basically adding what we spent the first 6 months, very similar with an additional $80,000. The Chino Airport plume, again, increased negotiations, we're going to spend an additional $35,000. The Salter negotiations, basically we had a huge amount of unbudgeted cost in the first 6 months. That now, with the Salter negotiations wrapping up, we should have not as much, but we should have an additional $40,000. Then we've got miscellaneous legal expenses for pools, advisory, and board. I've projected an additional $40,000 And that the regional board find we're sitting at $62,000, which we did not budget for. And then the contingency of $145,000, which would be part of the budget transfers that I'm projecting that we would do somewhere in April or May.
Joe, on that last slide, the $62,000.
Yes.
That's the fine, not the legal cert, not the legal cost.
Correct. That's just right. That's that just is just fine. A regional board fine. And if you look here again, the items highlighted in yellow, that's the items where we're going to be over budget. Again, the Ontario, the Chino, DeSalter, and there's no real surprise here. These are basically the same projections that we had the first quarter going into the second quarter.
My understanding on the Chino Airport plume is the CDA desires to take the lead in negotiations now with the County of San Bernardino. Is that correct?
Yes and no. They have never provided us with any kind of a correspondence that would say that they don't want us to participate or continue to participate with them. But in the practical application of our negotiations with the county on the Chino Airport, Mr. Jeske, who I think just walked in, didn't he? I saw him out as he walked by the door. Mr. Jeske, on behalf of the CDA, is actually doing most of the work at this point in time, and they are absorbing most of those costs. So we've anticipated our costs are going to be less, but we're still going to have some level of cost for the Chino Airport.
Can you go back to the previous slide real quick? As part of the legal services, is the non-ag part of that?
The paragraph 31 motion, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Where is that? Where is that? In the miscellaneous?
If you go to the next screen, you'll see it listed. It's not itemized there, but it's in the next screen. It's about the
paragraph 31 motion. Looks like for my 51,000, we're projecting 103. So basically, just again, the paragraph 31 motion is going to continue.
We're anticipating about 52,000 expenses beyond our first 6 months.
Okay, I see it.
Next slide, please. In regards to the project expenses, Mark Wildermuth has provided us with their estimated cost of completion report, and with that report, we've basically gone back in and then adjusted where we expect to be at year end. They're projecting cost savings and reductions of approximately $209,000. $33,000 of that is going directly to the OBMP engineering services, and the remainder of $176,000 is going into the various different projects. And of those projects, there's only one category, the 7300 category, which is the engineering support for the desalter that we're projecting to be over budget by $16,000.
This slide is kind of the finishing to the conversation we started with having to do with the Turner Basin, is that if things track the way we think we're going to track, the OBMP will add the line item, but the item will stay within OBMP and will come out of that $33,000 to cover our portion. If, in fact, we do end up using more than we anticipate, we'll have to do a different line item and actually move money there. We don't know that decision yet, so that's why we're waiting until later in the year to do that.
And again, the good news is that looking forward, projecting, basically knowing what we know today, and assuming the items that we can safely assume or project with a crystal ball, our budget of $6.8 million is enough to get us to where we need to go, and if there's any other additional as the Turner Basin, we can certainly fund for that. And again, the last thing that we don't know is
the heck?
The question, who's going to win? That's the only thing we can't predict at this stage.
I don't know. It seems like everybody who's doing predictions has got Green Bay winning, but yeah. I'm not so sure that's the case. But the bottom line here is that it appears that when we look at the positives and negatives through the budget halfway through the year, that even when you include the $62,000 fine from the regional board, that we will not have to do any special assessments of the appropriative pool in order to be able to make up for all of those funds. So it appears that we're going to be okay with our budget for the rest of this year, assuming all these things go as we predict. Now, if people decide not to play nice, then who knows where it's going to go. But if things are as we predict, we think that when we come back to you later in the year, which is within the next couple of months, that we will have line items to take care of all of these that will be finalized through the end of the year, and we will not have to do anything special with our budget in the way of special assessments. So that's the good news.
The only thing about the fine, the regional board fine, is we haven't really, we have funding for it, but we haven't decided how it's going to be distributed amongst the parties.
You're absolutely correct, Mark.
Along with that, I think that Fontana is going to be concerned and want to watch how the capital costs for basin improvement get allocated, because there's a clear and distinct pattern of how it's supposed to be handled, where capital costs get allocated out versus operating safe field. And that's something that we've been talking about internally, especially as it relates to the O&M costs of basin repairs. Mm-hmm. The storms that came through, and we heard that there's going to be a couple $100,000 worth of damages, and those are going to be allocated out to the parties based on production, not based on operating safe field, which is how the benefits were received. So right now, I think a concern that we have is that what has historically taken place as recharge based on production, and the O&M is based on, for the recharge basin, is based on production. There's been somewhat of a shift in how we're obtaining our replenishment water, and it's no longer through wet water deliveries into the basins for the last several years, yet the way the costs are allocated aren't keeping up with that. So that's something that we would like to have considered for the future upcoming budget cycle.
Noted. And I would suggest that, Sherry, if you could do me a favor and put those in writing so that Watermaster has those on file.
Sure.
We'll be glad to work with you and with Fontana on the development of some proposals that might be able to deal with that. That's definitely a situation that is occurring today that we had not anticipated. So.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from the members? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
CEO staff report?
Yeah, a couple of things. Let me leave number one actually till the end. In terms of legislative report, let me talk a little bit about the federal at this point in time. And it appears that in looking at what's going on in Washington, the 2011 appropriations have, at least on the House side, are yet to be really even addressed in the House. There appear to be a lot of other priorities that are going on at this point in time, and so it doesn't appear that there's going to be a discussion in the near future in the House side for those kinds of discussions about this fiscal year's appropriations. I'm anticipating, based on my conversations, that there's going to end up being probably another continuing resolution to fund the country, because this budget expires on March 4th. So unless they do a continuing resolution, they're going to be stuck. And the House doesn't seem to be, at this point, concerned about what they're going to do. And so I'm just kind of putting two and two together and coming up with my very easy prediction that we're going to end up with a continuing resolution. On the state side, again, a lot of discussion about the budget. Many of you may have listened to the governor in his State of the State address the other night. I listened attentively to see if I could hear the word water being mentioned anywhere. He mentioned it one time. Now, if anybody else caught more than that, let me know. But I heard it one time. And it was only in reference to the fact that it's an issue that he was willing to work with people on. So I don't know that at this point in time the governor is thinking much about the water future of the state of California. His major concern, and it appears that all of his energy is going into a vote that could occur in June to extend taxes for another 5 years that to help fill half of what he thinks is going to be the budget deficit. So you just have to kind of watch and see what's going on. Now, I do know that in talking with people in Sacramento, it appears that there is still work being done to construct a bond measure proposal that would also be put on the June 2012 budget that would be about half the size of the existing bond measure that is slated to go to the voters in June 12th. It will be sold as a bond measure that is everything that's in everything good that was in the 11.14 without all of the pork. Unfortunately, what they characterize as pork are the things that are important to us. So I got a feeling there's going to be a great deal of discussion and negotiations. And this bond measure is being constructed for two purposes. One, maybe to get onto the ballot, but if nothing else, it will be used as a leveraging point to try and renegotiate the existing bond measure. So we'll have to kind of wait and see how that plays out. But in the meantime, bills are now starting to filter through the House, both houses of the legislature, and to be considered by their authors to be entered into this year's legislative session. The legislature's only been in place about 4 weeks now, so 3.5, 4 weeks. So a lot of them, remember, a third of the assembly is literally brand new. So they're still trying to figure out where the bathrooms are, let alone how to write a bill. And so they're putting their thoughts together and stuff starting to come together in Sacramento. So we're going to see a flurry of bills, I think, starting probably next month before the legislature. And I assume that your legislative advocates are going to be watching for those and looking for those things that may or may not assist you in your ability to work with your agencies. And that's about it. The recharge update, we don't have numbers yet for January. Very crudely, you can pretty much anticipate that a very small amount of rainfall. I think we got 140 acre feet from the rainfall of this last week, that little half-inch, quarter-inch storm that we got. Actually, 140 acre foot is pretty good based upon that. We had room to take it, so we were able to get all of it into the basins. The rest of the month has been filled with recycled water and a little bit of urban runoff, so we've been able to get a little bit of water into the basin. This is kind of the reason why when people talk about the fact in December rains was the drought over, you got to say no. I mean, you never know when you're going to get the rain. So we had a really wet December and a really dry January. The last item is the CEO resignation. And as I'm sure all of you are aware by now, I have informed the board that I will be leaving Watermaster at the end of February to take the position of executive director at the San Gabriel Basin Water Quality Authority. I do that with mixed blessings and mixed feelings because I, at this point in time, I really like what I do here. I love the people I work with, both the staff members and all of the parties in the Chino Basin. I am currently and will, as long as I can, am able to talk about it, tell people that the way you manage a groundwater basin is the way Chino Basin does it. And it may seem like it's a cumbersome process that's used here. And many people have talked about the fact that there's this party, the pools, and the advisor committee board, and it is quite cumbersome, I'll admit. But, you know, darn it, it works. And everybody who is involved here in the basin has a forum with which they can make sure that their positions are made. And we may not always agree. But even given the limitations of the cumbersome process, this basin is doing so much more than anybody else in the state of California. Really, Orange County, when you look at other basins, Orange County, if you look at two models, Orange County and Chino Basin is the way to do it. And it's just because of you guys that happens. It's the dedication to this process, to making sure that future generations have the access to this resource just like we have. So it's with those, you know, comments, I this will be my last appropriative pool meeting, and I'm going to miss all of you working with you on a day-to-day basis. I'm sure I'll be seeing you at conferences and other functions, and please stay in touch. I will. And just pleased to have been here for 6.5 years. So and that's it. That's all I got.
Information items?
They're listed in the package, and if you have any questions, I'll be glad to discuss them.
All right. Are there any member comments? Seeing none, I think we would like to thank you for your dedicated service over the past several years, and we wish you nothing but luck in your future endeavors. So thanks a lot, Ken.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and close and go into a confidential session.
We don't have to wait for 10, right?
Okay, I guess we're back in the open session, and we have no reportable actions. However, we would ask that Watermaster staff put an agenda item on our next appropriate pool meeting
to authorize a legal agreement with Mr. John Schatz. And any other comments? All right, with that, we're adjourned.
Yeah. Yeah, we're 12 miles.